In previous classes, we've been discussing how to define God. What is the basic definition of God? There's definitely a lot of different attributes to God. So just like there are many attributes to a car you can define as a place that is enclosed with where you can listen to the radio, but that's not necessarily the primary definition to a car, although that is a broad definition to a car. So there are different attributes to God, and then we've discussed exactly what is the primary definition of God. We also discussed trying to attempt to the different attempts to prove God, or whether there is a proof for God at all, or whether it's just through life experiences that one gets a certain relationship, creates a certain relationship with God. That's basically what we've been dealing with until now. What we're going to discuss now, from now on, is what was suggested to discuss is to deal with different contradictions between science and Torah. So this is a big topic. I would like to discuss one issue today, and we'll discuss other issues in the future. But we'll discuss one issue today. Just before we get to like conflicts between science and the Torah, I don't want to start off by saying that once you jump into it, there are conflicts between science and the Torah. I think you have to first of all start off by saying that science also helps the view of Torah in certain regards as well. It's not just the pure contradiction that you have the world of science and then the world of Judaism, the world of Torah, and they just automatically create some sort of clash. That's not exactly how it works. There are definitely various aspects to science where you get a better appreciation, looking at it from the right lens, you get a better appreciation of God. The Rambam Maimonides says that one of the, if not the primary way of understanding God is through understanding the world. That once you have somebody who believes in God, so then through science, you can have a better appreciation of the chachma of the world, of the wisdom, the brilliance of the world, from the lens of how God created the world. And just by going through all the details and the nuances of not just the human body, but like the entire world, nature, the trees, animals, just all of existence, and just how it works and how it's developed is so profound that from that lens, to see the beauty of what God could create, causes a person. The Rambam says, Maimonides says, it causes a person to understand how low they are and how great God is. That only God could create such a world. Science also. I don't know if maybe we'll get to it in future classes, but it also helps. We'll probably deal with evolution in a different class, but it helps in terms of different issues of evolution. Just as like a basic example, and also as an introduction, I'm not a scientist and don't know what I'm talking about in this class, so just take it from the science perspective with a grain of salt. But from what I understand, just like as one example. You have DNA, which tells a protein within the cell what to do. It's basically the DNA is tells exactly the protein what to do, but the protein, so, and but the DNA needs the protein, and the protein needs the DNA, and like how they came together at once. Is pretty incredible from my understanding. Meaning you need to have both in order for either one to function. There's no need for DNA outside of the protein. There's no purpose to that DNA. And the protein alone without the DNA can't function. Right? The protein doesn't know what to do without its DNA. So to have the two merge at the exact same time, it's pretty incredible that like how that could happen. So there are different from what I understand, and this is just an example, and this is not what we're going to be discussing today, so we can study that at depth in a future point in time. But science could also help prove God from different aspects. But what I want to, so that's as an introduction. It's not just purely science against the Torah, but science could also help you to have a better understanding of God and appreciation for God. But there definitely are cases where it seems to be that science is a contradiction with the Torah. That it seems to be as such. Could anybody think of such examples? Where would it seem from science that it would at first glance
Age of the Universe.
Age of the Universe. That's the biggest one, and it's a very big one, which we'll get to. That's what we're gonna deal with today. Any other cases? Maybe not science, but archaeology, which is a
For
form of
example,
science.
Yetziat Mitzrayim, I don't know if there is it was actually, there is no evidence, for example,
Okay, that's a
Yetziat
great question also, which we won't deal with today, but hopefully we'll deal with in the future. Is Yetzias Mitzrayim, leaving Egypt and all the 10 plagues, is that recorded in history? Do we have any records of that in history? So that's a great question. Any other questions that a person may have?
Evolution also, because you.
Evolution, which we might get to also, yeah. Okay, these are some of the big ones. There are others also that scientists have claimed that historians have claimed that there's different other law books which they claim have existed prior to the Torah, which seem very similar to the Torah. Hammurabi's Code seems very similar to the Torah, so they claim that there are many that claim that the Torah just got it from Hammurabi's Code, which they say started around the time of Avram, approximately. When Avram was around, that's basically the time that Hammurabi's Code also, they say, started. These are the various issues. So we'll probably get to a lot of these issues. I want to start with the age of the universe. So let's first get into how do we know how old the universe is from a scientific perspective? From a scientific perspective, how do we know that the world is not 5,700 years old plus? How do we know that that's not the case from science?
They have good geological evidence. I think they're
What's the yeah?
studying.
What's that
I
evidence?
don't know. They, it's just like a tree.
Don't they need carbon dating?
Carbon dating is one. Is everybody here familiar with carbon dating? So carbon dating is, from what I understand, it's only a dating that would exist for life forms. It would not work for like a rock or something. The life form, let's say a tree or an animal. So after they take in carbon, they take in carbon 12 and carbon 14, from what I understand. Carbon 12 is six electrons and six protons, and carbon 14 is eight electrons and six protons. So the carbon 14, after that life form has died, so then it slowly turns into something else, which I forgot. But it changes. It's no longer carbon
So it's an
14.
unstable
It's
form,
an
I think.
unstable form, correct. And so it has a half-life, which means that half of it decays after, I forgot exactly what the numbers are, like 5,000 something years. And so they're able to figure out, based on its half-life, based on how much carbon is left over, carbon 14 is left over, how old it is. But because it's only its half-life is only like 5,000 something, I forgot the exact number. But the maximum it could be, because it constantly just gets smaller and smaller, its half-life, it can only decrease it by so much after it's a half, and then another 5,000 years it ends up being a quarter, then another 5,000 years it's an eighth, and then a sixteenth. It ends up getting so small that it only could go back to I think 60,000 years from the carbon dating. It can only go back. It won't go back to millions of years. It would only go back to 60,000 years for the carbon dating. I believe there's also other dating besides for carbon dating, which do go back to millions of years before. But I'm not so familiar with that. But in terms of carbon dating, it can only go back, which is itself a problem, 60,000 years. That's one. Olga mentioned the what was your
Yetziat
proof?
Mitzrayim?
No. The
Geological, you can kind of geological evidence. I don't know
there,
exactly
there, yeah.
how.
So there is geological evidence also, just based on the fact that there are various layers of Earth. It's not a single layer of Earth, but there's various layers of Earth. And the question is, how did that come about? The amount of time it takes to develop a new layer could be millions of years. It could take a long time. So to add on layers, they claim would take millions of years. And even within those layers, there's life forms within those layers. So it
Right.
was clear that life existed at that within those layers. You could sometimes see those plant life during those times. Another proof is, I guess, is doesn't give you the exact number, but dinosaurs, the fact that we have animal bones of animals, which which we don't have in our times, just poses a question as to exactly like when did that exist. I'm trying to think if there, anybody have any other. Oh, the rings of trees also. Yeah. The rings of trees also suggest that the trees have existed for a very long time.
I think also the light, the determination that the universe is expanding, I think is based upon the way the light is broken up. And so if you bring the expansion of the universe back to when it came from presumably a central point, they're able to estimate that date.
Oh, really?
I think that's how it works.
Okay, really. Okay, so that one I never heard.
And that takes us back to 13 billion years?
That takes back to 13 billion years, yeah?
I think so.
Okay, there's another one?
Another one that resembles the rings of a tree, when you look at ice, there's summer and winter, and you can, in Antarctica or some places, you can just, through ice, get to many, many thousands of years back. Just by ice.
Because the ice, what it covers itself. So you could track the seasons.
There are layers. If every year there are changes, you can see.
So you can see the changes from year to year.
Yeah.
And it goes back how long?
Very long. I did not prepare how to. Yeah.
But I'm saying it can't go like they've tracked. 60 and millions of years that they've tracked, like
there are also times of warming up and colding, so I'm not sure if
so they probably take an estimate
all the way back. But and there are ways of forms, different types of rocks they can estimate when which layer came from which time. So it's a whole science, and many things are coherent, they support each other. So
okay.
It's not one particular explanation. There are many explanations. But I know the one with the ice, of course, that to estimate the age of the universe, they measure it by light, how much fast it travels and how many light years.
Okay, interesting. Anyway, so there are various different ways to come about to figure out the age of the universe. That's from the scientific perspective. Now, from the Torah, so we look at the first chapter in the Torah, and so when the Torah describes the creation of the world, so it says that God created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh. And based on the calculation of throughout Tanakh, we're in now towards 5,700 plus years. That's where we're holding right now. So that seems to be a pretty clear contradiction, right? It seems pretty clear because God created the world in 6 days and then rested on the seventh. So how do you deal with this contradiction? So this question is a question for this issue, but it's also a question for a lot of times we're going to have contradictions between the Torah or the Talmud and what science tells us today. So I think the basic, the general way that we're going to deal with this is similar to the way you deal with this for all these other issues. And there are basically three different categories of how to deal with this question. One way to answer this is by saying, and we're going to deal with it in detail in a minute, is by saying the Torah is right. God was the one that gave us the Torah. God's telling us that the world is 5,700 plus years. Science must be something else. And we'll explain exactly what that is. We'll try to get to what that issue is. But God gave us the Torah, and if you believe in God and you believe that God gave us the Torah, so then it must be that the Torah is right, and we'll try to figure out a way to deal with science, which we'll do. We'll present that position in a minute. The second position is to take the position, these are the two extremes, that the science is right, really the science is right, and then we're going to have to fudge with the Torah. We'll have to figure out how to deal with the Torah. The Torah is not to be taken literally in those cases, even though in other cases, for the vast majority of the Torah, it is taken literally. But for those cases, you did not take it literally. And then those are the two extremes. And then there is a lot of middle opinions, which we'll get to in terms of how we'll explain exactly what these middle opinions are. But we'll get to the middle opinions. So now that that's the case, so we'll go through all these different opinions. Thank you. So we're going to quote four or five different sources. They're all in English. I got the translation of these sources I got from a colleague of mine who did who came up with a lot of nice sources, and he translated them into English. So because they're in English, we'll have various people around the room read this. Anybody want to read what the Lubavitcher Rebbe's opinion is on this? Anybody want to read? Going once, going five.
Basically, the problem, as it's rooted in a misconception of the scientific method, or simply of what science is. We must distinguish between empirical or experimental science, dealing with and confined to describing and classifying observable phenomena, and speculative science, dealing with unknown phenomena, sometimes phenomena that cannot be duplicated in a laboratory. In view of the unknown conditions which existed in prehistoric times, conditions of atmospheric pressures, temperatures, radioactivity, unknown catalyzers, etc., as already mentioned, that is to say, conditions which could have caused reactions and changes of an entirely different nature and tempo from those known under the present-day orderly processes of nature, one cannot exclude the possibility that dinosaurs existed 5,722 years ago, and became fossilized under...
That's when he wrote it. Mm-hmm. Mm. 5,007, I'm saying...
Yeah,
that was the year that he wrote.
He wrote, so 50 years ago.
Yeah, something like, yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, over 50 years, yeah.
And became fossilized under terrific natural cataclysms in the course of a few years rather than in millions of years, since we have no conceivable measurements or criteria of calculations under those unknown conditions. Even assuming that the period of time which the Torah allows for the age of the world is definitely too short for fossilization, although I do not see how one can be so categorical, we can still readily accept the possibility that God created ready fossils, bones, or skeletons for reasons best known to him, just as he could create ready living organisms, a complete man, and such ready products as oil, coal, or diamonds without any evolutionary process.
Yeah, so to sum, what is he saying?
So if God can create the universe, God can create processes that existed a long time ago that were different in terms of how they acted in time than they do now.
Now, yeah.
And just to assume that we see certain processes happening over a given time now doesn't mean that we should assume that they acted over the same period of time a long time ago.
Yeah, that is what he's saying. Now, science is working, and they have to work as such, in a world without God involved in it. They just have to work based on, and without God involved in the world, so then it's a fair assumption to say that whatever exists now and the rules that exist now were the rules that always existed. That's the assumption that they're making. So Lubavitcher Rebbe is saying, well, in a world where there's a God, so then why assume as such? It's possible that God, just the conditions of the world were different at an earlier stage in time than it is now. So we'll deal with that. We'll deal with that that issue also in later on. But he's clearly of the opinion that he says the Torah is correct. It's 5,700 plus years old. What are we going to do with the science? So he says that we're going to... We believe in God, and we believe in what the Torah says, so you would have to say that things changed, that something changed in the world. And that's the position that he takes. Others take another position, and they say that, you know what, the world is 5,700 plus years old, but God created the world in a way where it would seem like it's older. Why? Why would he do that? To test our emuna, to test our belief. That's what some would say. That is the position of some, that it's there to test our belief. Now, that is an explanation where it is an answer. It's an answer to the question. You have a question, and it's an answer to the question. Now, right, you could say that God created it as such to create a world to test our belief. Now, is it a reasonable answer? I'm not exactly sure how to define what reasonable is or not reasonable, but it's an answer. I can understand why some people wouldn't want to accept such an answer. It seems like just a way out of the question. But just in terms of the is it a possible answer? It is a possible answer. You can't. It would be hard to reject such an answer. But I can understand why people would be hesitant to agree to such an answer, because it seems to be just like a cop out and a way out. But in terms of just question and answer, unless anybody has a clear way of disproving this, it seems like it answers the question. The question is, how do you deal with the world? Well, God created it as such just to test our belief.
How do you know what he said, or she, or he thinks?
You don't. We have no idea. We have no idea what God's thinking. But we have. The point is that, let's say there's a reasonable assumption to assume that there's a God. And we have a separate question of, well, the world has been in existence for a way longer amount of time than the Torah. I have to answer that question. If I have a way of answering that question, so then I no longer have a contradiction. So I just have to answer that question. So this is a way of answering the question. We don't know what God's thinking, but it's a way of answering the question, which then tells us what God's thinking. But it does answer the question.
But you can also say that God does exist, but Torah may be not so accurate.
We'll get to that approach. But in terms of, I understand that you could give a different approach, but mm-hmm. in terms of this approach itself, so there's no direct question on that answer. It might be, you might suggest that it's like a cop out of the question, perhaps, but you don't have a logical rejection to that answer. You can't give a logical rejection to that answer. You could?
No, I want to strengthen this point and say that the world can have been created yesterday, and I'll tell you why. Yesterday is gone anyway. What we have is memories. Mm-hmm. So maybe it was created today, and what we believe was yesterday, and 100 years ago, when 2000, everything was put in us, in our memory. So we can say also, if we are only on the logical level, it's also logical to say that the world was created yesterday. That's the only comment I add.
At a logic level, it's logical to assume that the world was created yesterday?
Yeah, because what we have today about yesterday is our memory. You remember what you ate yesterday or what you did with your kids yesterday, but that's memories. It's in our brain.
So memory is not a...
We cannot go backwards to yesterday. We can go to recall things by our memory. But the memory exists now. It's memories that we attribute to yesterday, but what we have now is only our memory.
Just as God created the universe, God could have created the universe yesterday, or actually this morning when we all woke up, and part of the universe that he created was all of us with all of our implanted memories and all of our knowledge.
You could just say that.
One follows the other. Yeah. Uh-huh. The explanation that you gave opens the door, millions, billions, as explanation exactly like that. I think this is...
No, I'm not at the level of criticizing yet. Yeah. I'm just trying to explain the Rebbe's opinion. Yeah, I'm just pointing that if we are going about... Like, I have a friend who has lots of conspiracy theory about 9/11 and lots of crazy things. And for me, they are crazy not because they are totally illogical. If you really listen to him, putting reason to something is easy. We can even understand, at least it seems to me, that we can understand that the world was created today. And it just... Most people, if they are normal, they would not accept this. I don't even have an account why they won't accept it, because it is reasonable. It's not a contradiction in logic. So
I think part of this answer is also assuming other classes, which we either have given or will give, which is that assuming that there's a lot of reason to assume that a lot of, I don't know, not foolproof, but there's leaning towards the acceptance of God. So you have to put that into the picture. I mean, there's a good reason to accept God. There's a lot of good reason to accept God. We have a question here. So how do you answer, how do you deal with that question? It's not just, we'll deal with other answers, but it's not like a conspiracy theory where you just like have a few small things here and there where you're trying to create something. But here we have reason to assume, let's assume that there's a good reason to believe in God, and we have this other question that we have to deal with. So this is a way of dealing with that other question. Do you hear why how it's different?
I think that I understand Lubavitcher.
No, so that's a different explanation. Yeah, that's a different explanation. Yeah, but within the explanation that the reason why God did it was so that
to test our
belief. Yeah,
yeah, I understand that.
Okay, fine. So that's all the opinion to say that we'll accept the Torah. And therefore, we have to change our understanding of the assumptions of science, which is what the Lubavitcher Rebbe does. He once we're living in a world where God created the world, so then God could also change the climate and just how things exist in the world over time. Things could change from the viewpoint that there's a God in the world. Or you give this other explanation to say that science is also correct, but it was just all there to God created that to test our belief. That's all one perspective, and that's one extreme. Now we'll deal with the other extreme. The other extreme is to reject the Torah. Not to reject the Torah, but to reject...
Don't take the Torah literally.
Don't take the Torah literally, yeah.
Or to try and explain it scientifically.
Well, it's to play up the scientific conclusions.
Yeah.
And therefore, based on that, to figure out exactly what the Torah means by the 7 days of creation. So this was the opinion of the Michlam Eliyahu. This is Rabbi Dessler. And let's also read this explanation. Anybody want to take a shot at it?
Creation, by definition, is outside our world and outside our frame of thought. If time exists only as a mode of our thought, then the act of creation is necessarily non-temporal, above time. Every non-temporal act is interpreted in our frame of thought as an infinite time sequence. This is the reason why creation is interpreted by scientists as a process of evolution extending over vast eons of time. Since creation does not take place in time, we must ask why the Torah describes it as taking 6 days. The answer is that the Torah wishes to teach us a lesson in relative values. Everything has value only in relation to its spiritual content. Vast physical masses and vast expanses of space and time are of little significance if their spiritual content is small. The whole physical universe exists as an environment for the spiritual life of the human being. This is its spiritual content. When interpreting non-temporal creation in temporal terms, the Torah deliberately contracts the time scale compared with that which presents itself to the scientist, in order to convey to us the relative insignificance of the material creation compared with the spiritual stature of man.
Yeah. So what's he saying?
I think he's saying that it's a metaphor.
It's a metaphor. Yeah. Well, he's saying that it's not how creation evolved, because the purpose of the Torah is not it's not a history book. It's not a scientific book. It's there to as a religious guide, a spiritual guide. So when it does describe creation, it is for a certain purpose, but it might not be telling you what actually took place historically. It's there. It's not historically incorrect, but it's there to categorize things like, let's say, days. That means that's a certain time period. It's not a time period of 24 hours, but days is a certain category of what evolved during that time period or something like that. But it's not a historical account of creation. That's insignificant. Why would the Torah, which is an independent question of regardless of this class, you can have independent, why would the Torah even tell us about creation? What's the purpose of the Torah starting with creation? In other religions, I don't know that much, but do they? I'm not sure if they even start with creation. Well, they're working off the Torah, a lot of them, but Why would you have to discuss creation? So it's there for some spiritual reason, which is a whole separate discussion. Well, what's its significance? Its spiritual significance. But it's not a scientific book and it's not a history book. And so therefore, when it discusses the days of creation, it's not literal. That those days of creation are not literal. And really, the world is billions of years old. And so that's the opinion of Rav Dessler. We have this in other contexts as well, where science helps us to reinterpret the Torah. One such example is the rainbow by Noach. God tells Noach after the flood that he's going to create the rainbow in order to, as a sign, to tell us that he's never going to create the flood again. The Ramban, Nachmanides, asks, but the rainbow is a natural phenomenon. It's not, it's naturally what it happens in the world. So he has the question. I don't want to get into the answer now, but the point is that he has the question, and therefore he changes his understanding of the Torah. Now, you cannot just, at your own will, change the literal translation of the Torah. You need to have a real important reason as to why you're doing this. You can't just say, everything is just, I could interpret it my own way. And like the literal translation is just falls by the wayside. You're not allowed to do that. You have to have a good reason to do it. A good reason is what science tells us. Science tells us something, so then now there's no reason for me to assume, there's limited reason for me to assume that what the Torah is telling us is really what historically happened as being accurate. Really, the Torah is telling us something of religious significance. So you can't just pick and choose, but you have to have, as to what's literal and what's not literal, you have to have good reason to assume that something's not literal if you want to take it not literally. So that is the opinion of Rav Dessler. Now, just to point out as a question, once you take this approach, and I think this is going to be a question also which we'll find by some of the other approaches, that the world did exist for billions of years, potentially, like the approach that Rav Dessler was taking, I think a major question you would have to ask is, well, why did God create the world? It seems from the Torah that God created the world for man. Ultimately, it was for man. So then why would God create a world where for billions of years, man did not exist? Mm-hmm. Like, why would God create such a world? Which I think is a valid question to ask. I don't... it's a question. I don't have an answer to that question, but why would God create such a world if the purpose is for man? I mean, there are those that explain that God wants to limit the amount of miracles that exist in the world. And so he wants the world to evolve naturally. The way for it to evolve naturally is by this process of billions of years to ultimately get to man. So that would be a potential answer. God doesn't want to create. He tries to limit the amount of miracles as much as possible. When God needs to show a miracle, so then he shows an open miracle. But in general, the rule is that God tries to limit it, and so therefore, a potential answer would be that God. It still seems a little extreme that there'll be billions of years till the creation of man.
I think the opposite. I think it's still miraculous that a system that God created a system, including evolution and the development of planets and the universe, that would evolve and lead ultimately to
man.
Us sitting around this table.
Uh-huh.
It's miraculous enough, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, others would argue that it's not miraculous. Hmm. that it's just natural.
The astounding balance of natural forces that have I want to try to avoid the word miraculously resulted in us. I mean, it's endless when you think about like where the Earth is as between how far away from the Sun the Earth is. I mean, it's just
the right distance,
and a tiny, tiny, tiny bit a little further, we're not here. A little bit closer, we're not here. You know how we spin on just the right. I mean, there's just so many.
Which went back to the part that in our entire introduction about how science has taught us so much about the world that it's just going through all the details, we just, it's mind-boggling. Yeah, you would assume that it has to be through a God for all this to occur.
Yeah,
for sure, for sure.
You use the word miraculous?
No, it would be miraculous. It's still worthy of mentioning that there are those that disagree with that, and that it's possible for it to take place naturally. But I definitely agree with what you're saying, that just by looking at all the details and how everything was able to come together, which hopefully we'll get to in a future class, to discuss some of these examples, that it shows that it's coming from somewhere, that someone is organizing these events taking place.
But just one point.
Yeah.
So if based on the fact that that there was no creation until God decided let's create.
Correct.
So there was something that happened before, or even there was a before, even if there was nothing happening.
Well, this is a complicated discussion, but okay.
No, but my point is, if God can know what or control what's happened before, he should be able to control what's happening after. And if he knew when he created the earth 5,000 years ago what the mess the earth is in now, would he have done it? You know, the world's a mess at the moment. Okay. For all various environmental, political, etc. reasons, would he have still done it?
Would he have still have created the world?
Yeah.
Yes.
He should have been able to predict what's going to happen.
Well, that is you're dealing with a lot of different questions there. You're dealing with multiple questions there. That's not one question. And that
I don't expect an answer. It's just
I want to get to those questions, but you need to move slowly. You can't go quickly there. You first have to deal with like why God created the world and what's the purpose of the world and then you have to build off that. So it's for another time.
Just a comment. Dessler has a nice... Before the world was created, there was also no time. So it's not something that... We are limited in our ability to understand what was going on, but it's not that God was thinking in the way we think as a process a long time. It's something that we cannot understand.
We can understand.
The beginning happened. Right. So it's...
It's part of the proof that we really cannot understand God himself, because God, even though he created time, he's beyond time. God himself is beyond time.
So he made this, he began with that.
Yeah.
So it's interesting
to see. Yeah. So these are basically the two extremes to take, that either we should play up science and say that the Torah is there for just religious significance and it's not a history book, or we take the approach that if the Torah says it, so then it's true. And then science we're going to have to deal with, which is what the Lubavitcher Rebbe did. He said that in terms of the science, once God is, and which is what we believe in, God is in charge, so then the climates could have changed over time, and that the environment that we live in today was a different environment than what existed 5,000 years ago. There are a few approaches that are taken that are sort of in the middle, and that's what we're going to deal with for the rest of the time, these middle approaches. One approach is as follows. And it's based on the following medrash. I'll read this medrash. The medrash says, "Amar Yehuda bar Simon, Yehi erev ing sivkan ella vayihi erev." It says vayihi erev. It doesn't say there shall be night, but it says, and it was night. Mikan shahaya seder zmanim kodem lachen. But the fact that it says and there was night and there was evening implies that something existed before the and. And is a continuation of a pre-existing something. So there must have been something which was prior to the Vayhi Erev. What was that? Amar Rabbi Avo, Malamit Shaya Bore Olamos Machrivan Ad Sheba Es Elu. So the Medrash tells us, this Medrash was written way before any of the science, that God created many worlds. That the world that we have is not the first world that God created. God created many different worlds and destroyed them. Whatever that means. God created worlds and then destroyed them. And that's what Vayhi Erev is. Vayhi Erev is saying that God created many worlds and now is the world that we live in. And so we'll see the next explanation. But he's going to take this approach and say that the ground and the earth that we have nowadays, when we dig further and further, those are the worlds that God created and destroyed. And God just built upon that world until he came to our world. And so that's how you can have various layers of the world. And that's how the world could seemingly be exist for such a long time. Because God created prior worlds. And this Medrash was written way before any of the science. And so we see that we have a Medrash which tells us explicitly that God created many worlds, many different layers that built one on top of another. Now this leads to a whole different discussion, which I don't want to get into now, about whether how literal we're supposed to take this Midrashim. Are Midrashim meant to be taken literally or not? So the next explanation that we're going to see does take this literally. He is going to be taking this literally. But that is part of a broader discussion. Does anybody want to read it? This is the Tiferes Yisrael. Does anybody want to take a shot at this?
I'll carry on.
Okay, thank you.
As regards the part... Sorry, I'll read in South African, okay?
It's fine.
As regards the past, Rabbi Abahu states at the beginning of Bereshit Rabbah that the words, and it was evening and it was morning in the apparent absence of the sun, indicate that there was a sense of epochs before then. The Holy One created worlds and destroyed them, approving some and not others. The Kabbalists expanded upon this statement and revealed that this process is repeated 7 times, each Shemitah achieving greater perfection than the last. They also tell us that we are now in the midst of the 4th of these great cycles of perfection. We are enabled to appreciate to the full the wonderful accuracy of our Holy Torah when we see that this secret doctrine, handed down by word of mouth for so long and revealed to us by the sages of the Kabbalah many centuries ago, has been borne out in the clearest possible way by the science of our generation. So, carry on.
You agreed to volunteer.
Oh. The requesting spirit of man, probing and delving into the recesses of the earth, in the Pyrenees, the Carpathians, the Rocky Mountains in America, and the Himalayas, has found them to be formed of mighty layers of rock lying upon one another in amazing and chaotic formations, explicable only in terms of revolutionary transformations of the earth's surface. Probing still further, deep below the earth's surface, geologists have found 4 distinct layers of rock, and between the layers, fossilized remains of creatures. Those in the lower layers are of monstrous size and structure, while those in the higher layers are progressively smaller in size, but incomparably more refined in structure and form. Furthermore, they found in Siberia in 1807, under the eternal ice of those regions, a monstrous type of elephant, some 3 or 4 times larger than those found today. Similarly, fossilized remains of sea creatures have been found within the recesses of the highest mountains, and scientists have calculated that every 78 species found in the earth, 48 are species that are no longer found in our present epoch. We also know the remains of an enormous creature found deep in the earth near Baltimore, 17 feet long and 11 feet high. These have also been found in Europe and have been given the name mammoth. Another gigantic creature whose fossilized remains have been found is that which is called Iguanodon, which stood 15 feet high and measured 90 feet in length. From its internal structure, scientists have determined that it was herbivorous. Another creature is that which is called Megalosaurus, which was slightly smaller than the Iguanodon, which was meat-eating. From all these, we can see that all that the Kabbalists have told us for so many years about the repeated destruction and renewal of the earth has found clear confirmation in our time.
So he's really in between, because he's not taking any extreme. There's the Torah and there's the science, and until now we've been assuming the Torah is against the science, so you have to pick and choose and then somehow explain the other side. He's saying no, there's no contradiction whatsoever. The Torah that we have is is built off, its starting point of the Torah is after many other worlds which have been created. And the way he's understanding these worlds is these are not separate worlds, but these are worlds which God then created another layer on top of that, another layer on top of that. And so therefore the world that we're living in, the 5,700 plus years, are from the world that is on our layer and not from before that. And so that's the approach that he's taking. Yeah. Anybody have a...
But for example, you can maybe estimate how long people lived. And I understand we are longer than 5,000 years. I'm not sure. So, you kind of say, okay, start from when we were created. We are not talking about evolutionary perspective that is taking that we are. But we can estimate how long we
people.
Were people. And I think
It's longer, really, for people?
It's longer, yeah.
So you don't know what happened, that what existed in those worlds also.
Like, so there were people?
I don't know.
There's all the fossils and all your layers that you spoke about, it's all animal. It seems to be animal, human.
It seems like... Olga was suggesting that it was human.
Yeah, but all the fossils are animal, aren't they?
No,
it seems...
There are fossils like... millions of years ago, like 600 millions of sharks or things like this, but humans developed more than 5,000 years ago. So I don't remember if it's 50,000 or, but science, anthropology or some areas of science deal with there were Homo sapiens and before that other types, they would say apes or descendants of apes that, so they cut, so according to science, human beings as we know them, as human beings...
have existed way before that.
As Homo sapiens, are not 5,000 years. So it's still, even if you say that there are every once in a while a new world created, the one that we are speaking about cannot be 5,000 years also under this. So still there is a problem here.
Unless there were people created in those worlds.
Okay, but even there are many other problems. For instance, according to science, Earth is turning around Sun since it for so day and night as we know it, Vayehi-O and everything is already for many millions of years. So there are many things we need to change. It's not so simple to say.
What do you mean? The Earth going around the Sun is.
Day and night were created, again, according to science, I believe they would say, at least since the Earth is turning around, spinning around the Sun, the spin creates day and night. And they would say that this spin is not something which is even before there were any creatures on Earth, and still there was day and night.
So you're saying, how do you explain day and night in the Torah?
I'm just
according to this, according to the explanation, what does it mean that on the fourth day that the sun was created?
Yeah, if we take the account of man in the seventh day and the first day, it's one account, one world, I believe. And
interesting.
So
it's an interesting question. Yeah, it's interesting.
There's nobody around to prove any of this.
to prove what prove, this yeah. what the measure says. Yeah, it's also it's hard to know with this. The Midrashim are questionable whether it's supposed to be taken literally. Anyways, the concept that God created worlds and destroyed them is that literal or is that just there to teach us a lesson? There's some meaning behind it. But I hear that point. In terms of just like the middle categories. There's another middle category where, like Dr. Schroeder is known for this, if anybody has heard of him. So he tried to pinpoint exactly when the Torah describes the 6 days of creation, how the evolutionary process within that, and how like different verses, different psukim, are referring to different parts within the evolutionary process. And he's saying it's clear that the day is not referring to day, and I think his proof is a great proof. And others have also suggested this proof, where when was the sun created? What day? On the fourth day. The sun was created. So if the sun was created on the fourth day, so then for the first 3 days, What's a day? What's a day? How do you define what a day is? A day is not defined as 24 hours. A day is defined as when the sun comes up. But if there is no sun, so then there's no day. Mm-hmm. So then how do you ever have a day? So once the first 3 days is not literal, so then there's no reason to assume that the rest are also literal. They're all part of the same 6-7 days. So I think that's a pretty good and logical reason to assume that the days are not to be taken literally. But he goes in and he tries to show how every step in evolution could be found within the different verses in the Torah when it describes creation. And that's what he deals with. He has a book on this. It's interesting. It's an interesting idea. It's hard to know. It's speculative and it's hard to know. And also, what would happen if the science changes and the science does change over time? How would he then use that new science to interpret what the Torah says? So it is hard to know. But it's an interesting idea that he's suggesting. How the 6 days of creation and all the details within that fit within evolution. There's a final point that I want to address, which is definitely something which I guess for me personally, there are different answers that are given, but for me personally, this one resonates the most. And this is an idea. Well, Rav Hirsch might deal with this a little bit, but I also heard this from Rav Aaron Lapiansky, somebody that I listen to a lot. So he says that there's, in terms of just creation itself, there's a lot of mysteries within creation. Just in the very beginning of Sefer Bereishis, the very beginning of the Torah, there's a lot of mysteries and a lot of unknowns. We just don't know that much in terms of the historical facts of the Torah, which is similar to a point that we mentioned earlier about the fact that the Torah is not a science book and it's not a history book. It's a guide. It's a guide for our lives and it's a guide for creating a relationship with God. But there are just so many unknowns, like when Adam was created. So we know that he was not created as a baby. He wasn't just a baby. Did he have adult teeth? Did he have teeth? Did he have adult teeth? Did his baby teeth come out?
Yeah.
And then he grew adult teeth. Well, what was his level of maturity? Did he have to develop his level? Did he have to grow as a person? It would seem that he did it, that he was an adult and he had he might not have had a memory, but however way it worked, he was able to think logically, even though a lot of logic is based off of putting things together and memory. But somehow he was able to do this. So even Adam himself, when he was first born, just scientifically, how did it exactly work is an unknown. It's hard for us to understand. To create a person who's an adult and can act like an adult without having that experience of living life to become that adult. So that itself, just the creation of Adam is just, it's hard to understand. And also, when he was first created, he wasn't created into a world of just pure nothingness. He was created in a world, it wasn't just virgin soil with nothing existing in the world. He was in a world which was an already existing world. God put him into an already existing world. So that means that the world had to have existed for a certain amount of time. The example that he gave, the Rabbi Lapiansky, when I heard this, is that, let's say you have somebody, I forgot exactly what the term is, but somebody wants to buy jeans. That you could buy jeans that already, they look old. Like it's in style. Yeah. To buy old-looking jeans because they could tear very easily. So
pre-torn.
I'm not talking about pre-torn. Before pre-torn.
Oh, okay.
So would you? So if I'm looking at these jeans, I see somebody else. They're wearing these jeans for the first time. So do I ask them like I've never seen that? It looks like you've been wearing them for the past 10 years.
Yeah.
So is that a wrong? Is that an accurate statement or an inaccurate statement to say that these jeans are 10 years old? Now they're inaccurate because they weren't around 10 years ago. These jeans, the material wasn't around. So in that sense, it's inaccurate. But in a certain sense, it is accurate because they have the similar properties as a 10-year-old jean. Just like a 10-year-old jean, those jeans, they could rip very easily. So in terms of the properties of these jeans, so then, yeah, they're 10 years old. They might not have existed for 10 years, but in terms of their properties, they are 10 years old. Another example he gave is that if you have somebody who's in their 40s and they go through a traumatic experience, which has a very strong impact on their physical well-being, so doctors would treat them in the future as if they're 60. Meaning the same issues that one would be concerned about for a 60-year-old, so then doctors would be concerned for this 40-year-old. Now, is he 40 or is he 60? So he's lived a life of being 40 years old, but in terms of the properties of the person, the way we'll categorize him, in terms of doctors, the way they'll deal with such a person is that they'll deal with such a person as if they're 60 years old. So too with the world. The world that Adam was put into was not a world of just day one. It wasn't a day one world. It was a world which already God created a world which already pre-existed. A pre-existing world. So, I don't know what that means. My point is that it's just the whole thing is a mystery, including the fact that the Torah is not a history book, and it's not a science book, and it's not just Adam. It's and exactly how things took place in the times of Adam, from Adam until, let's take the time period from Adam until the Mabel, until the flood. So the Medrash tells us that when Adam went into the bed with Chava, two went into the bed and four came out. Now that doesn't exist nowadays. So the whole process of creation was a rapid process. It was a very fast process, according to this explanation. So that strengthens the point that the original point that the Lubavitcher Rebbe made, which is the fact that just the climate and the environment was very different. God had to speed it up. The lives, if you go through the Torah, how long did they live for until the Mabel? How long did they live for?
Hundreds of years.
Hundreds and hundreds, 900, 600, 700, 800 years. So that doesn't exist nowadays. So just what existed then is such a big mystery. Exactly like what the climate is, what exactly took place, is a huge mystery. And that's one time period. Now, the Mabel itself, the Torah tells us by the Mabel, that after the Mabel, God says, you know what, from now on, I am going to have seasons. We'll have the winter, we'll have the summer, we'll have the spring. We're going to have seasons, which means that either prior to the Mabel or just during the time period of the flood itself, there was no concept of a season. There was no concept of a season throughout the world. God said after the flood that we'll create a concept of seasons. The Medrash even tells us that the reason why they sinned before the Mabel, before the flood, was because they always lived in the climate of spring. The Medrash tells us this. Now, I think there's a deeper meaning behind that, but even based on its literal understanding, you have to understand why they sinned because of that, but the literal understanding is that there was no climate change prior to the flood, according to this. So just the point is that we just don't know what existed, even from the Torah's perspective, what exactly was occurring, what the climate was like. The Mabel itself, the flood itself, we also don't know what kind of experience that was, whether that was like with all that rain coming down. And the Torah even says explicitly that the Tehom was opened, that the bottom of the earth was opened. I'm not even sure exactly what that means. So what exactly does that entail? And if you have floods every day coming down, so then that could potentially lead to different layers of the ground. I just don't know. And the main point here is that it is a big mystery. And the last stage is the Dor HaFlaga, the generation where of the Tower of Babel. And by the Tower of Babel, that caused people to disperse. That resulted in people spreading out through the lands. So the Rambam, Maimonides, in his guide for the perplexed, he explains why do we have this whole story of the Dor HaFlaga of the Tower of Babel. And he explains it's because the Torah is telling us about the creation of different cultures. That how did it happen that there are so many different cultures in the world? And so the purpose is to teach us about different cultures and that everyone spread out very quickly. It was an increased rate of spreading out of the cultures, and that's how perhaps you know, people could be found, the Indians could be found in America, or Australians in Australia, but it was spread out at a rapid pace. And what you get out of all this is that, how could that occur? It was something which we can't really fathom. And the point to all of this is that it's very hard for us to really understand what took place at that time, and what climate and what environment it was. And if it was different, assuming it seems to be that it was different than what we had, so then something changed. Something must have changed to the way we're living now. And so therefore, the science's assumption that the way to date the Earth now is because everything stayed the same from the beginning of creation wouldn't be correct based on this. And just the fact that people lived for so long, the climate would be different, and it wouldn't be accurate. So something must have changed, and it's just a mystery to us exactly what happened. And I like the approach which says that it doesn't, from a Torah's perspective, not from a science perspective, but from a Torah's perspective, it doesn't really make that much of a difference. Yeah. That's not the role of the Torah. That isn't the role of the Torah. I mean, science is science, and it has tremendous value, does tremendous things. And Torah has its own function, which is to guide us spiritually. And so I think Rav Hirsch deals with this a little bit, and with this we'll close. Anybody want to read Rav Hirsch? It's not that long.
Judaism is not frightened even by the hundreds of thousands and millions of years which the geological theory of the Earth's development bandies about so freely. Judaism would have nothing to fear from that theory, even if it were based on something more than mere hypotheses, on the still unproven presumption that the forces we see at work in our world today are the same as those that were in existence with the same degree of potency when the world was first created. Our rabbis, the sages of Judaism, discuss the possibility that earlier worlds were brought into existence and subsequently destroyed by the Creator before He made our own earth in its present form and order. However, the rabbis have never made the acceptance or rejection of this and similar possibilities an article of faith binding on all Jews. They were willing to live with any theory that did not reject the basic truth that every beginning is from God. In fact, they were generally averse to speculation about what was in the past and what will be in the future, because in their view, such questions transgress the limits of that which is knowable to man, or at best, they did not enhance man's understanding of his moral function. In the view of our rabbis, the Book of Books was intended to be mankind's guide for life on earth as it is at the present, to teach man to recognize God in the here and now, as the everlasting creator and the master of the universe, and to worship him by faithfully obeying the laws by which he governs mankind. Our sages felt that the work of attaining this perception of God and acquiring all the skills needed to carry out man's God-ordained duties was enough to keep the human mind fully occupied during hours not devoted to the actual performance of these duties. Anything beyond that simply did not exist for our sages. Why then should our attitude be any different today?
So he says pretty clearly, and I think very nicely, not that he needs my skamma, but the point of the Torah is not to discuss the history and the science, which is of great value also, but that's not the goal. And so the way whatever happened then is not, it's hard to know, and things could have changed. But really, the descriptions of the Torah are really for moral and religious significance. And that's what the Torah is trying to get at, even with the whole discussion of creation. The purpose of the Torah is there for symbolic reasons, trying to help us in our religious connection to God. And it's not there as a historical account per se. And that answer I find to be the best answer for me personally. There are a lot of different answers that are out there, as we've discussed, but that really resonates the best with me. That's any questions?
How do you distinguish this approach from Hirsch's approach?
It's very similar with Rav Dessler's. It's very similar. It is very similar. is there a difference? They're very similar. I'm not sure if there is a difference. You're right. They're very similar.
In a sense, this approach is actually, you need, for example, the first approach that you say, no, the Torah is right and science is wrong, is actually, you need some approval from science that the Torah is right. You kind of this approach that it doesn't matter what happened, it's kind of, in my opinion, it's high level of belief, it's kind of absolute belief.
The second approach.
No, the approach. That
the first approach. Yeah, the first approach. Yeah.
Not the first approach, like Dester and the
Hirsch.
It's kind of ultimate belief. Okay, we will live by physics law, not by kind of in this world.
I think that this approach puts more emphasis on ethics and say that whatever Torah is a way of life and not history. So I totally, it speaks well with me. But the whole discussion clarified to me, at least this from the stance of we were talking, that there is a difference between science and Torah, because all the defense here, or mainly, was that in different times, maybe things were different, but in science it's the opposite, because when, for instance, Einstein's laws are different than Newton, we'll say not that once it was Newton's laws and then later on it's Einstein's laws. What we would really say is that Einstein is more accurate. And once people believed that the Earth is flat and now it's rounded, so we will say then they were wrong, now they are right. So laws of nature, I think by almost definition, is regularities, things that do not change in time. And one of the basic things that we kept on saying again and again, and this is a great difference between this approach and science, is that maybe when world is created, time was different, other things were different, but this is the opposite of the way science tries.
That assumption is different, yeah, correct. That assumption is different than science.
Two very different things that I can conclude for my how I see the differences with these ways of explaining the world is that in order to accept Torah's account and science, you need to say the laws then were different than the laws now, and what science is all the time talking is about laws of nature which are
constant and ongoing.
Yeah.
Would be different. I think that's true. I think that would be true. That yes.
I was just thinking, yeah, I've read a little bit of Dr. Schroeder and had the pleasure of listening to him. At least once. And
he came here.
He was in Winnipeg once.
He was in Winnipeg, right?
And it was fascinating because what he wasn't, he, the way I read him, and maybe I read him differently than other people read him, but what I heard him saying is he was pointing out how one can begin to try to reconcile a fundamentalist understanding of 7 days or 6 days of creation and what we currently know about science, and how he also talked about the evolution of our knowledge in science and talked started speculating as to where it might start reaching, you know, because of how much it's advanced over the last few hundred years, exponentially, and how our understanding of even what time is has changed. Anyway, I can't begin to do justice to him whatsoever, but what he did do is open up the possibility of an appreciation for the evolution of scientific knowledge, and to say that, who's to say in 100 years or 200 years from now that our science is not going to be even further aligned with our understanding of what our sages have told us about the meaning of these.
Yeah, because science is constantly changing.
Well, it changes in leaps and bounds, just like evolution has, frankly. But our knowledge hasn't been, as scientific knowledge hasn't been a constant. It's developed, and you know, our concepts of what time is certainly have changed drastically since Einstein, and post Einstein, that stuff. I don't pretend to understand it, except to know that it's changed. Time is relative to space, and you can change time by going faster, right? So, to read him is to open up the possibility of the idea that you might be able to marry Rav Hirsch and Dessler with Lubavitcher Rebbe at some point in time in the future.
Okay.
So Hirsch is
actually, when I read Lubavitch, actually it was what the Rebbe of Lubavitch, I thought about it, actually was scientific answer. He said, you assume that some stuff is a constant, and actually this is how you do science. You assume stuff constant, and you are changing some other stuff, and you can...
Right.
But he said, maybe it's a wrong assumption. Actually, it's a very scientific approach, but we cannot know what other... This is the best we can. But if I understand correctly what you are saying, maybe we will find to understand in our assumptions that this law, physics law, are not changing. Maybe
That's what Dr. Schroeder addresses. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. He actually tries to put some meat behind some of Lubavitcher Rebbe's speculation about what we understand about science. It makes for interesting reading.
Yeah.
It makes, for me personally, no difference in how I conduct myself in life, because I'm a Rav Dessler fan in terms of, you know, if the Torah is only spending a few, a half a chapter describing eons of a time, then how relevant is it to how I'm supposed to behave when I interact with people, when I interact with with God, or try to.
Hirsch is more current.
Hirsch, yeah. He,
because Dessler he passed away in 1953. So that's already 60, 70 years ago, whatever it is.
No, so Hirsch is before that.
Before that?
Yeah.
He's 150 years.
Yeah. He's before that.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. I hope this...
That was great.
Thank you.